Chapter 8, 10 September 1929. Lizzie could not remember a time when Joey didn't have bouts of illness. She was always the first to know when he took bad. She would hear his breathing rasp in the night, or a cough would make him hack for hour after hour. If illness started in the day, she would hear the first hoarse note in his voice, or feel the heat from his body when he started a fever. It always scared her to see him wilt before her eyes. Auntie Maisie talked of his sister Gertie and brother Charlie, who had already gone to heaven after being taken ill. She was afraid she might lose Joey in the same way. That night she woke feeling stiff with anxiety. It was pitch dark, Peggy's head pressed heavily into her shoulder, but she was still asleep. Sharing a single bed, Lizzie often felt squashed. She tried to edge further away without wakening her. Uncle Seamus's heavy tread sounded from the next bedroom. His voice came rough with anger, though he kept it low. It was only when she heard the thin whimper that she remembered there was another new baby. "Thank goodness it's a girl this time," Maisie had grunted. "They're more help about the house. Patrick and Georgie are nothing but hard work." Georgie was well under two and still needed napkins. "Babies, so they are," Seamus had muttered. "Time to grow, that's all they need." The recent birth had put him on edge, but now it was safely over. "Boys are nothing but trouble. Look at our Joey." It came again then, the half-suppressed croak, and she knew what had wakened her, knew why she'd been filled with sudden dread. She raised herself up on her elbow. "Are you all right, Joey?" She couldn't see him, couldn't even see the sagging curtain that shut off the boys' double bed from her and Peggy. There were only two bedrooms in the gatehouse, and Joey's parents occupied the other with the latest baby. "Yes," he answered, but he sounded wheezy. She knew he was ill. She was always conscious of the bond between them. Joey was the person she felt nearest to in all the world. She flopped back on her pillow. She was sure he had some sort of special power. Joey had quick darting eyes that left the casual observer with the feeling there was something odd about them. They were extraordinary eyes, alert and intelligent. It had taken her a long time to realize that they were not the same color. It wasn't that one was bright blue and the other dark brown. The depth of color was about equal. The right one was the color of strong tea, the left slate blue, and both were marbled with deeper shades. "I've seen a dog with ill-matched eyes," she'd heard Uncle Seamus brood, "but never a human being." "At least they're straight," Maisie was apt to snap, "and he sees well enough with them." "I put it down to mixed blood." Seamus was of pure Irish stock, while Maisie had the olive complexion and dark brown eyes of her gypsy ancestors, though she described herself as English. Joey had her colouring, but his foxy features came from his father. Lizzie slid out of bed and drew the curtains at the window to let in a little light. The only other piece of furniture, apart from a couple of upright chairs, was a chest of drawers. She lifted the pink curtain round the boy's bed. Joey's eyes sparkled feverishly up at her. "I could do with a drink," he said hoarsely. Beside him, Patrick stepped with his arms round little Georgie, who had been put out of the cot in his parents' bedroom to make room for the latest baby. She went quietly downstairs and filled a jug from the bucket of drinking water they kept in the scullery, took a mug off the shelf, and went back upstairs. Poor Joey. He felt on fire when she touched his forehead. He drained the mug without stopping, gulping it down noisily. It made her heart turn over in dread. She refilled it, and he drank that too. "I'll be all right now," he said, collapsing back on his pillow. Joey felt fuzzy when he heard the clock downstairs strike 12. His bed was shrouded with rose-tinted gloom, but he knew it was broad daylight that filtered through the curtain dividing the room. He struggled to sit up. It was cold, and he felt clammy with perspiration. There was no other sound. The house seemed to die when Dad went to work and his brothers and sisters went to school. His head throbbed, and he felt as though he was suffocating. He wanted to take deep breaths, but a pain stabbed through his chest every time he did so. His mouth was dry. He craved another drink, but the jug was empty. He wanted Lizzie to come home and comfort him. He felt alone, abandoned, and unwanted. But the hours stretched ahead empty and uncomfortable until she would return. "Mom?" His voice sounded weak and puny. There was no answer. Joey shivered and let himself fall back on his pillows. Nobody but Lizzie took much notice when he failed to get up for school. He was sick so often. "Mom?" he called again. She must be here somewhere. He felt she didn't care whether he got better or not. This time he heard her stir in the next room. "What do you want, Joey?"
"A drink. Are you getting up?"
"Not yet."
"It's dinner time."
"Get up yourself, Joey." Perhaps he would. He had to have a drink. He was tired of lying here, and the sheets had come loose. He sat up and put his feet on the floor. Instantly he was shivering. Cold seemed to invade his bones. He'd been cold last night and put his pullover on over his pajamas. He always slept in his vest. It wouldn't make him much warmer if he replaced his pajama jacket with his shirt, and he didn't feel up to it anyway. Downstairs the front door slammed, and quick footsteps came running. He knew it was Lizzie before she flicked up the curtain and came to sit on his bed. He felt his spirits rise as clean cold air wafted in with her.
"I've come home to get you some dinner."
She was out of breath.
"Ran all the way. Are you feeling better?"
He nodded, tried to smile.
"Poor Joey."
Her arms went round his shoulders.
"You do look poorly."
Her face against his was cold, her eyes sparkled, and her cheeks were rosy.
"Where's Auntie Maisie?"
"Still in bed."
"Fire's gone out again. It'll take me a few minutes, but I'll find you something to eat."
"A drink," he gasped. It was always Lizzie who looked after him when he was sick. She knew what to do. She refilled his water jug and brought up warm water in an enamel bowl so he could wash. Found him a clean pair of flannel pajamas, wrapped him in the eiderdown off her bed while she made his. Then brought him a bowl of warm bread and milk. He heard her next door talking to Mam.
"Are Joey sick? You must have known he was dying for a drink. How can you lie there doing nothing?"
"I'm lying in myself. I've got to be careful, haven't I? I don't want the new baby to catch his cold."
"It's more than a cold. Don't you care about Joey?"
"Of course I care."
"The doctor would give him medicine to make him better."
"He came last month to our Joey, and now he's sent a bill. He's been here since seeing to me, and he said he'd look in again at the end of the week."
"Our Joey's feeling awful now. He can't wait till the end of the week."
"We can't afford the doctor all the time."
"I'm going to ask him to come."
Joey wanted to cry with relief. He'd never felt this bad before. This morning he'd tried to ask Patrick for more water, but he hadn't been able to get the words out. Lizzie had brought him mugs of tea without being asked.
"Don't you dare!"
"Joey needs him."
"You'll have to get Mrs. Bender to pay for him then. We can't, not with all the expense of the new baby."
Lizzie was hovering by his bed when he opened his eyes again.
"I've got to go back to school. Will you be all right?"
"I feel a bit better."
She paused, looking at him doubtfully.
"All the same, I'd feel better about you if the doctor came."
He knew she'd never asked him to come before, not without his mother's agreement. As Lizzie came out of the house, she was just in time to see the doctor's new Morris Cowley swish through the gates and turn towards the Dower House. It made up her mind for her. She ran after it, but he'd gone inside by the time she got there. She marched up the front steps and rang the bell.
"Hello, Lizzie."
He'd got no further than the hall and was wearing his overcoat when he opened the door.
"What brings you here?"
"I saw you come. I know you can make people well again."
"Not always."
"I want you to make our Joey well."
"Joey? Did your Aunt Maisie send you?"
Lizzie hung her head in misery.
"That means she didn't," he pressed.
"She didn't," she admitted. "She says Joey's just got a cold, but he's really poorly. It frightens me to see him like this."
"What frightens you exactly?"
"The difference in him. He's weak as a kitten. Can't do anything. When he's well, he's strong."
"Joey will never be as strong as you. He was very poorly when he was a baby. So ill we didn't expect him to..."
She knew he was biting the words back, knew he thought Joey was a puny weakling.
"But he is strong," she assured him. "Strong in mind, anyway. Strong enough to boss everybody and make us do what he wants. He always gets his own way. He can even make Auntie Maisie do what he wants. That's strong, isn't it?"
"A different sort of strength, Lizzie. Not physical. Illness makes no difference."
"It does," she said earnestly. "Joey can't do anything today. Can't even think straight. He's sweating and shivering and got a pain when he breathes."
"Right, then. I'll pop in and see him as I pass," the doctor promised gravely.
His hand was resting on her shoulder. It was a gesture she recognized. So many grown-ups tried to show kindliness and support that way. Her teacher at school, for instance, though she gave extra homework, too.
"You did right to come and tell me, Lizzie. If you are ever sick, I'd want to know, too. If you can't come and tell me, send Joey or Peggy."
"Yes, doctor."
She knew there was something about her that made him show an interest in her welfare.
"Is Joey in bed?"
"Course he is."
"Is that why you aren't at school today?"
"I am. I'm going back now. I came home at dinner time to see how he was."
"Then you'd better run all the way," he said. "You're late already."
Lizzie ran until she got a stitch in her side. She hadn't explained it properly to the doctor even now. She should have said that when Joey was well, he seemed to have a rod of iron for a backbone. He knew how to avoid doing what he didn't want to do, and he dared to do those things which teachers and parents forbade. Rules and regulations were for others to keep, not Joey. He had lots of energy and lots of brilliant ideas, and nobody was more fun. But when he was sick, all that magic went. He lay in bed, a wan ghost of himself. He couldn't even get his mother to fetch him a drink of water. Every evening after she'd got the children to bed, Clarissa and Leo ate supper together in the dining room. By then the day's work was done, and they could relax. Tonight they were later than usual, because he'd started to harvest the hay. Everyone on the farm had worked late into the evening. Clarissa knew he was tired out. "The sheep are pushing through the hedge to the Dower House garden again," he worried. "I'm afraid I'll have the doctor asking when I'm going to do something about it." "Tell him you can't spare anybody for hedging at the moment." Hay harvest was an anxious time for Leo. From the moment he gave orders to cut, it was essential to have dry weather, otherwise it could be ruined. He was always edgy until the crop was safely in the barn. "I saw the doctor outside the gatehouse."
"Did he mention the sheep? They've made a mess of the flower beds."
"No, he said he was sending Joey O'Malley to hospital. He's quite poorly. Pneumonia." Clarissa helped herself to another slice of bread. "He said Lizzie begged him to go and see Joey. He'd called in to see Maisie and the new baby earlier in the morning, and she never mentioned Joey was even off school."
"Typical. Seamus O'Malley's been a thorn in my flesh for years. A troublemaker. I'd have sacked him long ago if you hadn't billeted your protégé on him."
"Not my protégé," Clarissa objected. "And she's not billeted. They're bringing her up as their own. Maisie's told everyone her sister died in childbirth. Lizzie's been there all her life, Everyone accepts that.
Seamus didn't turn up for work again today.
You should have sent someone down to get him. Leo liked to think of himself as a tough and practical manager, but Clarissa knew he usually deferred to her wishes. Lucy could persuade him to do anything she wanted.
I did. That meant I was 2 hands short for the first hour. He had a mammoth hangover when he did turn up.
Still wetting the baby's head?
God knows why.
Leo sounded exasperated. He openly said he had too many before she was born. Clarissa saw the O'Malley family in her mind's eye. The deaths of Gertie and Charlie left Peggy as the eldest, now a lanky 11-year-old, and Joey coming next in age, at 9. He'd been known as poor Joey since infancy, when he'd been so ill with scarlet fever. All the O'Malley tribe suffered from permanently dripping noses, but poor Joey caught every infection that came to the village, severe or otherwise. Recent years had added 2 toddlers, Patrick and Georgie, of 4 years and 20 months, respectively. She'd resented each arrival because it made Lizzie's position more difficult. Now there was the new baby, to be called Flora. All were whey-faced and whippet-thin, with mousy hair, all on spindly legs ending in heavy boots. The boots were smaller versions of those their father wore to work. Stiff, unlined leather, laced tight over the ankles, still tipped and with studs in their soles. No child could ever wear them out. They grew into them and out again, and the boots were handed down to the next in age.
He's been standing about all day, done virtually nothing except set a bad example to the others. In the middle of haymaking, it doesn't help. Leo blinked angrily.
Sounds as though you should never have taken him on, she replied shortly.
Hard to get rid of him now, though I can't see they'd be much worse off if I did. Seamus probably drinks all his wages anyway. There's that empty cottage up on the hill he could rent. It's a long way for the children to go to school. Even further for Seamus to get to the pub. Maisie might be grateful.
You wouldn't, Leo. They'd have nothing but the money Hannah sends for Lizzie's keep. Seamus would never get another job. Everybody knows what he's like.
You mean he won't find another fool like me? Leo said grimly.
It was early September, a year later, and a chill afternoon for the time of year. Maisie had shut all the children out of the gatehouse, her patience worn thin by the long school holidays. Flora had been hanging on to Lizzie's hand, but Joey was 10 and thought her too much of a baby to come with them. He'd persuaded her to play ball with Georgie and Patrick. Now Joey was up a tree in Bender's orchard, picking the biggest apples he could reach and dropping them gently. Lizzie stood below, holding out the skirt of her dress to catch them.
"That's enough," she called softly. "The bag's nearly full."
"There's plenty more good ones here."
Lizzie was anxious. She was keeping lookout, too.
"I think I can hear someone coming."
"I can't."
2 more apples thudded into her skirt.
"It's all right for you. You're hidden by the leaves. Nobody would see you up there."
"I won't be a minute."
"There is someone coming. Mr. Bender's crossing the yard. He'll see us in a minute. I'm going."
She caught the last apple he threw down, snatched up the full carrier bag, and started to run. Behind her she heard the soft thud as Joey jumped. He was pounding after her, catching her up, taking the heavy bag from her grasp and racing ahead. Now that he was growing older, Joey was at last getting stronger. He turned out of the orchard and showed a clean of pair heels up the lane. It was a long, straight stretch, but he'd turned the corner before Mr. Bender had a chance to see him. Lizzie ran on, trying to reach the same bend where the hedge would hide her. She was within 20 yards when what she was dreading happened.
"Lizzie," Mr. Bender called angrily, "what are you doing?"
She stopped running. She could hear his long stride gaining on her in any case.
"Nothing, Mr. Bender," she gasped.
"You've been taking my apples."
"No, no, I haven't," she denied.
"Lizzie, you've got one in your hand."
It slid from her fingers as she stared at it.
She'd forgotten she was still holding it.
"And I saw you come out of the orchard. When you're caught, Lizzie, you only make matters worse when you tell fibs. You know you shouldn't take them. You deserve to be punished."
Lizzie was quaking and glad to hear Joey coming back to support her.
"We only took one each, honest, Mr. Bender. We were hungry, and it wasn't Lizzie's fault. I made her come with me."
"I might have known you were in it too, Joey O'Malley. I'm going to speak to your father. It's got to stop."
He kicked at the apple on the lane, shattering it to pieces, and turned abruptly on his heel.
"Rotten luck," Joey whispered when he was out of earshot.
He was going down to the water meadow. There's a sick cow down there. Still, he didn't see the rest of the apples. Lizzie was touchy.
"If you'd come down straight away when I first heard him, we'd have been all right."
"Come on, Liz, we've still got the apples."
He retrieved the bag he'd hidden from the other side of the hedge.
"Let's go to the stables."
They often went to the stables. It was a place of refuge where they could escape from Maisie. In the summer, the horses spent their days out in the fields, and they had it to themselves. In winter it was warm and dry, and the horses were an added attraction. Last year, Leo Bender had caught them feeding extra oats to the horses and put the stable out of bounds to them, but that only served to increase the attraction. There was a hayloft above, reached by a ladder, where they knew they could hide if they heard someone coming. Only 5 horses were kept at Yarrow now. 2 large shire horses to pull farm machinery, the pony that pulled Clarissa's trap, a hunter that Leo rode to hounds, and Dando, the pony the Bender children shared. Their pace slackened. The stable door was wide open, and they could see Nicholas Bender currycombing Dando, a small broad-backed pony. Nick came to the door as they approached.
"What was all that shouting?"
"Your father's cross with Lizzie again," Joey said. "He was nasty to her."
"Why?"
Nick was a squarely built lad of 14 with tousled hair, golden brown eyes, and a smile that lit up his face. He had the same high, clear colour in his cheeks his father had.
"You been up to something, Lizzie?"
"No," Joey said, "nothing at all. I won't let him speak to Lizzie like that. She's a princess, you know. Her father's a king, and he's searching for her. She's been lost for years."
Nick laughed.
"That's baby talk. Lizzie's no princess, and you'll never convince anybody she is. What's that you've got?"
"Apples." Lizzie took a large bite. "Do you want one?"
In times past, more horses had been kept at Yarrow, and one of the empty stalls was now used to store straw for bedding. Lizzie threw herself down on it and pulled Joey down beside her.
"Are they from our orchard?"
Nick selected one from the bag, while Lizzie burrowed into the straw to make a place to hide it.
"Course they are."
"Mother says we mustn't pick them yet. They aren't ripe."
"They're ripe. They taste ripe, don't they?"
"Your mother doesn't mind Lizzie taking them," Joey said. "She likes her. Let her do anything she wants." "Well, you know why," Nick said.
Lizzie felt mystified.
"Of course I just told you," Joey said, "because Lizzie is a princess who was kidnapped from her palace and given to me. Your mother knows this, but your dad doesn't. Like we read in that book, Lizzie, I told you you were someone special."
"What nonsense! You are silly." Nick offered an apple to Dando.
"It was your book once," Lizzie reminded him. "You read it, didn't you?"
"Fairy tales, that's all those are. I know who you are. I heard Dad talking about you only last night. He calls you Mum's protégé." "What's that?" Joey demanded suspiciously. "Someone she's taking care of. Someone she wants to protect."
"But why should she?" Joey wanted to know.
"You really don't know who she is?"
"No," Lizzie said. "Uncle Seamus calls me the cuckoo in the nest."
Nick threw back his head and hooted with laughter.
"Mam says she's my cousin," Joey volunteered. "She can't be. Why would my dad and Mum make fuss like this if she was?"
"Who am I, then?"
Lizzie demanded.
I don't believe her either. I think her mother was a very important person. A queen or something, Joey said.
Now you're being stupid again.
I think her mother is a friend of my mother's, Nick said importantly. In fact, I know she is.
But who? Lizzie gasped.
She and Joey had mulled over this question endlessly. Joey kept coming up with different answers, each more exotic than the last. She no longer knew what to believe.
Mummy's always going on about her friend Hannah. I'm sure it's her.
Hannah?
Lizzie tried the name.
Are you sure? Auntie Maisie says her name was Bessie, and that she was her sister.
That's just to cover up.
Cover what up?
I don't know exactly. Something dreadful happened, and your mother had to leave you here.
She didn't want me.
Lizzie felt a shiver run down her spine.
I want you, Joey said. You're my twin.
Is my mother rich?
She asked in a small voice.
I think so.
Nick pulled a paper bag from his pocket.
Richer than us. Have one of my humbugs.
What's she like, this Hannah?
Joey asked, stuffing a sweet in his mouth.
I don't remember much about her, Nick admitted, but she was here once. Used to live in the Dower House. She must be someone important, or my dad would sack yours. The only reason he lets you O'Malley stay is so Mum can keep an eye on Lizzie.
I thought Mrs. Bender liked me,
Lizzie was saying sadly when she caught Nick's eye.
Though not, of course, as much as she likes you and Lucy.
She likes Jonathan and Hal more than me, and my dad does.
She's sorry for me, Lizzie said. That's all.
Only because your mother left you with us, and we're too poor to look after you properly, Joey said. Lizzie should be as rich as you are, Nick.
We aren't rich, he said with a grin. Dad's always on at us about being more careful with money.
But you've got a pony, Joey said.
I've grown too big for Dando, but my dad won't get me another. He says he can't afford it.
There's Shandy and Casper.
I'm forbidden to ride Casper. He's too big for me. Not until I'm older.
But you go to boarding school instead of the one in the village. Even Lucy goes to school in Colwyn Bay.
That's not being rich.
It's not being poor either,
Lizzie rounded on him.
It was a horrible thing my mother did. Every child should live with its own mother and father.
I bet she's sorry now. When I'm grown up, I'll find her for you, Joey said, his eyes blazing. I might be able to do it sooner.
Nick took another apple.
My mother gets letters from her. She knows where she is.
Would you? Lizzie laughed excitedly. I do wish you would. Find out everything you can about her, please, Nick.
Well, I think I could get her name and address for you.
I'd love to find her, Lizzie enthused. I'd love to know what she's like. Is she beautiful?
He shook his head. I don't remember that either.
But you must remember something, Lizzie protested. If she was really here.
She was, honest.
If Nick can get her name and address, we'll go and find her one day, Joey said. I'll help you get your own back. We'll make her sorry for what she did.
How?
Lizzie asked.
I don't know yet. We'll think of something when we're grown up.
I'll make us rich first. Rich people can do anything.
You're back in ploughed cuckoo land, Nick said. I wish you'd grow up. I'll look after Lizzie, and there won't be any nonsense like that.
Lizzie had always had the feeling of not quite belonging anywhere. At home in the gatehouse, Auntie Maisie made it plain she came last in order of importance. At dinner time, if there wasn't enough food to go round, which often happened, she was always the one to go short. She would be given bread and jam when the other children had plates of stew put in front of them. Auntie Maisie would look at her with cold eyes and say, "You can always go up to the farm. Tell them you're hungry and they'll give you something." And nothing annoyed her more than seeing Joey fork his helping in half and push the plate between them so they could share it. But he always did,
and took half her bread and jam in exchange.
"You need feeding up, Joey," Maisie would scold angrily. "You aren't strong, not like Lizzie. It won't hurt her."
Sometimes it seemed Auntie Maisie resented having to feed her at all. Lizzie felt an outsider in the midst of the O'Malley family. It was true she never failed to get something to eat in the kitchen at Yarrow Farm. Tatty seemed to like her, and even if visitors were expected for a meal and Tatty was busy, she would still find time to cut a piece of cake for Lizzie. If there were only routine family meals to prepare, Tatty welcomed her and let her help.
"You've got a light hand with pastry, Lizzie," she'd say. "All you need is practice, and one day you could become a cook like me."
Yesterday she'd gone to see Tatty and found Lucy in the kitchen with her.
"You're just in time," she'd said. "I'm going to show Lucy how to make a sponge cake. You can make one too if you like."
"Yes, please. I love making cakes. Don't you, Lucy?"
"No. I wanted to go into town with Mama, but she wouldn't take me."
"Your Mama's gone to the dentist, Lucy."
"I don't like you looking after me, and I don't like cooking."
"You've never tried it, Miss Hoity-toity," Tatty said. "Your Mama's a good cook. You could be too if you wanted."
"I don't," Lucy told her crossly. "I want to choose material for a new party dress."
"Can you sew your own dresses?"
Lizzie asked, her eyes wide with awe.
"Would you show me how?"
"My mother does it silly," Lucy sniffed. "I just tell her what I want."
"But she'd teach you if you asked her?"
"She is teaching me, but I can't do it by myself, not yet."
"I wonder if she'd teach me."
"Why don't you ask your own mother and leave mine alone? You're always here, wanting something."
Lizzie felt Tatty's flowery hand rest on her shoulder for a moment.
"Lucy, you are a crosspatch this morning. I thought you'd like Lizzie to keep you company."
"Well, I don't. I hate her. My mother keeps making me sort through my things so she can give my toys and clothes to her, and she's always trailing after Nick, wanting him to play. She battens on all of us, even you. I wish she'd stay away from us."
"Lucy, you're being very naughty." Tatty's voice was angry now. "I want you to say you're sorry to Lizzie."
Lucy abandoned her cake-making to stand with her back to the fire, legs apart, glaring at her.
"Won't, then."
Lizzie took a deep, shuddering breath, appalled at what she'd heard.
"I'm going,"
she choked, already halfway to the door. It was cuttingly hurtful, because everything Lucy said was true. Mrs. Bender was always kind to her. Sometimes she ran the bath for Lizzie up in the nursery and helped her wash her hair. She had such lovely big warm towels. Peggy and Joey hadn't even seen a bath like that and didn't know how lovely it could make you feel. Mrs. Bender would bring her a whole set of clean clothes. She'd always known they'd been Lucy's once, but she thought Mrs. Bender gave them to her when Lucy had grown out of them. Last time she'd gone home wearing a blue dress and feeling very smart.
"That would do for our Peg," Maisie had said, feeling the good wool worsted between her fingers as soon as Lizzie was through the gatehouse door. "You've plenty of things to wear without that."
Lizzie didn't want to part with it, but she'd done so, because it was true Peggy hadn't had anything new for ages. Already she was taller than Peggy, so there was no problem with the fit. Once the underwear she was given went into Maisie's wash, Lizzie couldn't rely on getting it back again. Like everything else, there was never enough to go round. Even Joey wore Lucy's vests, because Maisie said they would keep him warmer than any she could buy, and if he was warm, he wouldn't be ill. Lizzie was glad to give anything to Joey, particularly if it would prevent him catching another chill. Sometimes Lizzie thought the greatest possible luxury would be to know where she did truly belong. Everybody else seemed to know and take that for granted. She didn't belong at Yarrow Hall Farm either. Lucy hated her, and everybody else felt sorry for her. She ran down the drive, angrily rubbing blinding tears from her eyes, promising herself that when she grew up she would go and find her real mother. find where she truly belonged.